This episode is sponsored by The Lucky Bear. Mention this podcast and get $10 off your next session. Visit www.theluckybear.com to book today. Hello and welcome back to the Tricky Notes podcast. This is Trick. And this week I just kind of want to talk through an idea I have. And it's kind of a hypothesis about the most important album of an artist's career being their third album. Okay. So I'm going to kind of explain what I mean by that. But first, let me kind of explain where I got this idea. Okay. So a while back, when I was working on the Diva directory for Madonna, I was talking about how her first two albums, she really didn't have much creative control. She was kind of assigned like executive producers to work with. So while she did have a say on what was going on, those producers were really kind of driving those projects. And while they were good albums, they still are considered classics. They have had amazing songs on them, you know, both Madonna and Like a Virgin. Those first two albums are great. But on the singles, you'll notice that she didn't really have a hand in writing much of them. If you look at the albums as a whole, you know, she's got a lot of songwriting credits on those first two albums, but they tended to the singles that ended up getting released, you know, majority of them were not her songs. So you look at that first album, the first, you know, hit, it wasn't the first single, but it was the first hit, was Holiday. And that was not a song that Madonna wrote. And then Borderline, also a song Madonna didn't write. But she did write Lucky Star, so they're you know, kind of showing, you know, her songwriting back then. But then you go over to Like a Virgin. Like a Virgin was not written by Madonna. Material Girl, not written by Madonna. Dress You Up, not written by Madonna. And then, you know, and then Angel was the other single released, which was written by Madonna, even though I think more focus was on the B side of that, which was Into the Groove, which was also written by Madonna. So she didn't get to really kind of use her songwriting chops, or the producers didn't believe in her songwriting as much as she believed in her own songwriting. But when it came to time for the third album, Madonna finally had enough confidence from the record label to pull in her own producers instead of having them assigned. And she found, you know, pulled in, you know, a producer that she had worked with before that, you know, she could write with. And, you know, of the major singles from that album, you know, she wrote Live to Tell. She wrote Open Your Heart. She wrote La Isla Bonita. She wrote True Blue. She didn't write Papa Don't Preach, but she did add additional lyrics to it. So every one of the singles had at least a touch of her writing to it. And that album is what really kind of cemented her legacy in the industry. And that was her third album when she finally got creative control. So I really think that this hypothesis I had really kind of drives around the point that the third album is where you figure it out. The third album is where you either get control of your own career and you can make your own decisions, or if you're a band, which I'm going to talk about some examples of that, you figure out what it is you want to be as a band. So I already mentioned True Blue. So let me talk about some of the other examples I have of artists that the third album really, really cemented their legacy, and a couple where the third album kind of derailed their careers. Okay. So let's start with one of my favorite bands of all time. And that's ABBA. And, you know, ABBA, you know, obviously they're from Sweden, so English was not their first language. And their first album English not being their first language is very, very evident in the lyrics, which isn't a bad thing. It's not a horrible album. It's a good album. There's a lot of seeds there that would later germinate as her career went on. And, you know, it was a record of its time in like 1972. So it really kind of was a learning process for them. And then their second album, and, you know, they were getting better with their English. You know, that the second album was Waterloo. First album was Ring Ring. The second album was Waterloo. And Waterloo, of course, featured the Eurovision winning song Waterloo. But the rest of the album, you know, there was some good stuff on there, but they were still kind of figuring out their band. They're like, on that album, they play with a lot of musical styles, still kind of like trying to figure out lyrically. But then that third album, is where most of, like, songs that you would recognize start coming into their discography. Yes, you may remember Waterloo. Yes, you may know Ring Ring, but that's all pretty much all you'll remember from those first two albums, unless you're a big fan. The third album, which is just their titled ABBA, it's the album where they figured it out. They figured them out, things out lyrically. They figured things out musically. They dialed it in and just kept going from there. And, you know, it's the album that featured Mamma Mia, SOS, two of their most iconic songs, period. So, you know, just kind of after looking at ABBA, I was like, okay, this is really kind of keeping up with my hypothesis here. So started looking at, you know, some other artists. I looked at Whitney Houston, for example. And Whitney Houston, her first two albums, you know, were produced by Clive Davis and were pretty much very, even though they had R&B songs on there, they were really more pop driven. You know, I Want to Dance with Somebody, So Emotional, How Will I Know, you know, and of course my favorite Whitney Houston song, Love Will Save the Day, you know, but, they, once again, it's like she could sing anything, you know? So, I mean, there's no doubt, Whitney could, you know, take anything and make it hers and give her own unique spin on it, even if it was a more pop-centric sound. But when it came to Whitney's third album, I'm Your Baby Tonight, you know, she finally was able to add herself to the executive producer list and be able to choose the producers she wanted to work with and the songs that she wanted to sing. And, you know, one of the biggest up, you know, things for her was pulling in Babyface and L.A. Reid. Now, Babyface and L.A. Reid had a lot of success in especially in the R&B world. They were, between, you know, them and Teddy Riley, were really the leaders of the New Jack Swing movement that was going on. And, you know, Whitney pulled him in, and, you know, the lead singer was written by L.A. Reid and Babyface. You know, I'm Your Baby Tonight, you know, they wrote, you know, multiple other songs on the album, and, you know, produced as well. And, you know, I mean, she still had narrator Michael Walden, who had produced some of the other songs that she'd done before, you know, produced tracks on this album as well. You know, one of the biggest singles was All the Man That I Need, huge ballad, you know, R&B ballad. So, I mean, she still had that R&B ballad, but now she had more those kind of dance pop songs on the album were more in that R&B lean direction, if that makes any sense. You know, so that, and that really, having that control, it really kind of showed the world, this is the artist Whitney wants to be, you know. And then, I mean, she followed it up with the Bodyguard soundtrack. I mean, you know, how, you know, huge that was. And then after that, the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack and the Preacher's Wife soundtrack. And then My Love Is Your Love, which was the first studio album in 8 years when it came out. And, you know, she really, where she still had some pop sensibility to her stuff, is still had that art. She never let go of that R&B flair again. It stayed through the rest of her career, because, you know, that's where she wanted to be. And that third album is what cemented that for her. So far I've talked about a couple artists where the third album fit my hypothesis. It's where they, you know, got control of their career. It's where they kind of cemented their legacy. And, you know, they, but these all had certain amounts of success prior to that third album. Now I'm going to talk about two artists that their third album is what put them on the map. You know, they had, you know, two prior albums. It's just that third album is what cemented their career. So the first one I'm going to talk about is Janet, Janet Jackson. So if you're a Janet fan, you know which album is her third album without even, you know, a second thought. But if you're not as familiar with Janet Jackson's discography as everybody else, you might think her third album was the album Janet, which had, you know, That's the Way Love Goes and If and, you know, You Want This and all of those. But that wasn't her third album. Her third album was actually Control. And once again, fits into that idea of she got control of her career with the album Control. And so Janet had had two albums prior to Control. The first one was Janet Jackson, and the second one was Dream Street. And they had a couple, you know, hits. You know, Say You Do from her first album was a minor hit, did well in the R&B charts. And the second album on Dream Street, Don't Stand Another Chance, was a decent size R&B hit again. But once again, didn't really hit, you know, the mainstream. Even though Don't Stand Another Chance featured Michael on background vocals, was, you know, produced by Marlon Wayans, her brother. But they just didn't hit, you know. And it's on Control where Janet found her voice. And there's a lot of reasons behind that. You know, Janet at that point in her career, you know, her father had been managing her career up to that point. She separated from him. You know, she, at the same time, she had her first marriage dissolved. So she was going through that while this is going on. And, you know, she was introduced to Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, who were part of the Minneapolis music scene that was really kind of, you know, hitting at that time. You know, you had Prince, you had Andre Simone, you had The Time with Morris Day, you know, and Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis were part of The Time as well. You know, so you had that sound that's coming in, and finally someone is working with Janet, and Janet's actually allowed to write. You know, Janet's first two albums, she didn't have any songwriting credits. But, you know, the main, like, three of the main singles from Control, Janet wrote, you know, with Control, with Nasty, with What Have You Done For Me Lately. You know, she wrote on all of those. Now there's, you know, she didn't write everything on the album. I mean, you know, there's, she also co-wrote Let's Wait a While. But it's, you know, she didn't have a hand in When I Think of You or the Pleasure Principle. So, you know, she still knew how to interpret songs and be an artist. But finally, she was able to, kind of rambling a little bit here, but basically she finally was able to find her voice and actually share her voice and be the artist she was meant to be. And that album, that Control album, is what cemented her legacy. You know, followed up with Rhythm Nation 1814, which was absolutely, you know, classic. And Janet was amazing, and Velvet Rope, and, you know, go on, you know, just that string of albums, just absolutely, you know, absolutely amazing, you know. But it's was her third album, once again, that defined her career, put her on the map, that really kind of cemented her legacy. And, you know, and it's because she finally got control of her career and she was able to do what she wanted. Now, the next one I'm going to talk about, I was actually talking to a friend the other night, and he did not realize that this person had more out, you know, two albums before the one he knew. So the next album, where the next person I'm going to talk about, where their third album put them on the map, was kind of known as the Debbie Gibson of Canada. With her first two albums, you know, they didn't hit the US at all. There was just no traction whatsoever, you know, but she had moderate success in Canada, you know, not like runaway success, but decent success. But it's her third album that took the world by storm. And it took the world by so much storm that you cannot find those first two albums anymore. Janet's first two albums you can find on streaming. You can listen to them if you're interested in hearing them. But this artist that I'm talking about now, those first two albums are near impossible to find legally. Legally is the key word. And that is Alanis Morissette. So Alanis Morissette's third album was Jagged Little Pill. The album that just exploded. And it's still one of my favorite albums, period. It came out when I was in high school. It's one that I've loved and appreciated and really hit me in the right spot with the things that I was dealing with and I was going through, you know. But it was her finally taking control of her career, working with a new producer, writing new music. I mean, Alanis wrote the stuff on those first two albums, but they were very, very bubblegum pop. I mean, when I say she was the Canadian Debbie Gibson, she was the Canadian Debbie Gibson. And I'm talking about Debbie Gibson's first two albums type Debbie Gibson, you know, but not, once again, just did not cross to the US. And, you know, and smartly for everybody involved, Maverick Records, which released Jagged Little Pill, convinced MCA to withdraw those two albums from circulation, and that's why you still can't find them. MCA was happy to do it because they didn't have any legs. They, you know, they were, like I said, moderately successful, but they weren't really doing much. And she had left the record label anyway, so why would they promote her? But yeah, Jagged Little Pill was once again a third album, and the album where Alanis Morissette was able to really show her voice and really kind of push that forward. Now, I've talked about some of the successful and kind of like pointed out like some of those that where that third album was really kind of, you know, made their careers. So I want to talk about a few that that third album derailed their careers, for lack of a better word. So let's kind of start with the with one that kind of goes along with Madonna, which is the first one I talked about in the other. So early in Madonna's career, she was constantly being compared to another female artist that came out around the same time. And the other female artist was getting all the critical acclaim, was getting the Grammy nominations, was nominated for Album of the Year for her debut album. Madonna didn't get any Grammy nominations. You know, I don't think she even got like a non-video Grammy nomination up until Ray of Light. That gives you an idea of what, you know, Madonna was just not well-liked in the critical Academy type thing. Now, her albums would get great reviews, but they weren't seen as quote unquote, you know, art, so to speak. So anyway, the artist I'm talking about is Cyndi Lauper. Now, Cyndi Lauper, I love her. She's so unusual. It's a good album. I don't necessarily hold the same idea that it's a essential album. You know, to me, it has a bit of filler on it that just hasn't aged as well. But you can't say that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a huge album. I mean, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Time After Time, you know, She Bop, you know, fantastic songs on the album. And then her second album, you know, you had True Colors, you had Change of Heart, once again, huge hits. But then her third album was A Night to Remember. You probably don't remember it, and there's a reason. The lead single is great. The lead single was I Drove All Night. You know, fun song. Not really like, you know, one that changed the world or anything, but it's a good song. But that album, the album's not good. I don't know how else to say it. There's some weird choices of songs on that album, and it just doesn't work for me. And it didn't work for the public as large because it was not that successful. And she never really, her career never really recovered after that. Half of the Stars, the album after that, that had some beautiful, beautiful songs on that album. You know, Who Let in the Rain, anything, but because her third album wasn't successful, nobody was paying attention to Half Full of Stars. You know, it didn't have that impact, you know, so to speak. And that's sad. You know, Cyndi Lauper is still a fantastic artist, deserves the accolade she gets, but you know, she hasn't always chosen the best material to sing. Now, another one, also from the 80s, of, you know, I tend to lean very heavy to the 80s because that's where I grew up and a lot of my music, 80s and 90s. Another artist from then that was huge with her first two albums, but then just fell off with her third album, is Jody Watley. Now, I love Jody Watley. I think she is underrated. I don't think she gets the love that she deserves. She's not as well remembered. But, you know, she had great tracks. And much like Janet, she also had a producer that came from that Minneapolis scene. You know, Andre Simone co-wrote most of the music with her for her, you know, debut album and, you know, her second album. And, you know, and you know, she had huge hits on those albums, you know, Looking for a New Love, Don't You Want Me, you know, Real Love, Friends, you know, everything, just really, really great stuff. And then her third album, you know, it came out in 1991. And you know, it wasn't, it was good. It was an album called Affairs of the Heart. And you know, but it was such a departure from the rest of her music. And you know, before it was very dance driven, and this, the Affairs of the Heart was much more R&B kind of smooth, you know, ballady, you know, R&B driven. You know, it still had some dance tracks. I mean, the lead single, I Want You, was, you know, in the vein of, you know, her prior hits. And the second single is one of my favorites of her, you know, I'm the One You Need, but it does not fit in the album at all. It was, you know, written by, produced by David Morales. That gives you David Morales, huge dance producer, house. It's this random house track in the middle of this R&B album. It just doesn't fit, and the album doesn't work. And I don't, and I know she was trying some new things, and, you know, she was showing off her voice more, you know, by singing these ballads, you know, because she's not really as well remembered for her voice, you know, as she probably could, because it was on dance tracks, that she had a unique voice and has a unique voice. She's still out there singing and doing stuff, but her, you know, that album failed, and subsequent albums failed, and you know, she had good stuff on them, but it's just, unfortunately, you know, it derailed her career, because that third album just did not have what it needed. Another example of another late 80s, early 90s female artist is Paula Abdul. Paula Abdul, you know, first album, Forever Your Girl, numerous hits, huge overall, and it just followed up with, you know, Spellbound, which, you know, had also numerous hits, you know, Spellbound had Rush and Promise of a New Day and Blowing Kisses in the Wind, you know, really, really good stuff. But then her third album came out, and the lead single was this weird Indian musical instruments, Middle Eastern beats meshed with like hip hop. And it was just, you know, and it featured an Israeli singer. It's a very weird song in her discography. I liked it, but it really, it's not one of like the top ones I'd go to for her, but it did not succeed. And you know, followed it up with Crazy Cool, and it's just kind of a nothing burger of a song, to be honest. And the album is just disjointed, doesn't work at all. And it derailed her career so badly, she never released another album. She's released a couple songs here and then, but never released another album. So, you know. Now, I kind of want to end this with another statement. Now, the third album, success or failure, does not necessarily mean that the career is over, because there are some examples of artists whose third album, you know, didn't really hit, but they had a fantastic career after. One of those is Kylie Minogue, you know, and another one is Robyn, R-O-B-Y-N, you know. Both of them started in this kind of production, you know, with like different producers working with them. And then they had to completely refigure out who they were as artists to be able to come out of it and be, and kind of get where they needed to be. Also, on the flip side of that, sometimes a band or an artist would have such a great third album, but it signaled problems to come, and they really never really recovered. And one of those I would like use as an example is Smashing Pumpkins. Their third album was Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. And, you know, album is fantastic. You know, a little bloated. It's a double album. So, you know, there are a few songs on there that, you know, could probably do without. But, you know, that album, I don't know how to sell this lightly. It inflated egos, and they followed it up with Adore, which really completely like flipped their sound, and, you know, and it just didn't, they got so high on their own supply that they thought that everybody would come along with them on this journey they were going on, but they didn't give enough people. They didn't lead people long enough to get there. Not that Adore is a bad album. It's, you know, got some decent stuff on it. I'm a big defender of Perfect. But, you know, it did show where they were headed. You know, kind of just how that goes, so to speak. So I don't know. I think it's interesting to look at, and I think the more I've looked at this, the more I've seen that, you know, there's other artists that third album, you know, either made or broke their career. You know, Taylor Dane, Debbie Gibson, their third albums did not succeed as well as previous albums, and their careers, you know, didn't really recover. And then you have people like Mariah Carey, whose third album really kind of boosted her into the atmosphere with her career, you know, so, and there's some artists that you third album's all you got, you know, it's just, it was a band that broke up after the third album, or, unfortunately a band member passed away that, you know, they didn't do like TLC or Nirvana. Their third albums was all you're going to get. Well, TLC kind of, they had a fourth album, but it's kind of not as much Left Eye as I would want. But anyway, well, I hope you enjoyed my rambling talking about this. I know it's kind of weird, you know, kind of an idea, but I just kind of want you to think about that. You know, if you enjoy an artist, it's like that, you know, kind of see where their career is, and a lot of it boils down to that third album, you know, and that third album is where it made them or broke them. So, but anyway, well, that's it for this week. Do have some music reviews that are coming out soon. So hopefully, I'll get those recorded and out. And, you know, I've got other stuff planned. I've got, like I said, I've got a backlog of stuff I've written. I'm just working on getting them all recorded. So hope you enjoyed my rambling. If you did, please make sure you subscribe, leave a review. It helps me and the algorithm. And until the next time, sending you much love.